Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much. Hello, 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 hello. Let's try that again. Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much. Hey, there you go.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Dermot. Thank you very much. Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. How are you? Yes, it's happening. It is happening. They forecast that it would happen, and it is. The weather is brightening up. There's a high pressure coming over the country. It's going to stay there for the weekend. That's what they're telling us. And high pressure means good weather. So dust off the barbecue and get the shorts and the sunscreen out and the hats and all that. And get ready for some summer weather this weekend. That's what they're telling us. Last week we spoke to Cara Darmody, and you heard Adam Harris there from As I Am, an organisation that represent people and families who are associated with autism, as in families who have children who have been diagnosed with autism and people who are autistic like Adam himself. Anyway, Cara Darmody was with us last week, and her two brothers, Neil and John, have autism. She's 11 and she is an amazing young lady, and I don't know if you heard her story, but she's sitting the junior cert maths exam to raise money for children with special needs in her community of Ardfinnan in County Tipperary, because she's seen firsthand what life is like for her two brothers, Neil and John, 9 and 5. The good news is that she has exceeded her GoFundMe target of €10,000, and she has raised €17,000 already, which is brilliant. And today is a big day for her because she's up in government buildings for the whole day, and she's meeting on the Tánaiste to Leo Varadkar around now, and it'll be interesting to see how she gets on. I think she was on Morning Ireland this morning, and she sat in here last week, and she was just an amazing, inspirational, you know, grounded, lovely, everything, all the good stuff, Cara Darmody. So we wish her well today with her chat with Leo Varadkar. And let's hope that it makes a difference, because we're hearing the story about the Millen family, Gillian and Darren, and their two children, their two boys, Ryan and Kyle. And there, when Micheál Martin was Minister for Health, he stood up in the Dáil and represented him. And 3 years on, nothing had changed. And now he's the Taoiseach. Is that the way politics work in this country? It probably is. You know, it's easy to get up there and say something, and then the news cycle moves on and people forget. Well, some people forget. Most of us do. But the families who are in the eye of the storm, they don't forget. Anyway, let's hope there's a good outcome from that. And well done, Cara, on raising €17,000 for people who do good work in your community. So while we're on people raising money, we spoke to Nicola. It's always going to be Nicola to me now. Nicola Coughlin, that's what they call her in the States, from Bridgerton and Derry Girls. And she was on to chat to us about various things, including the fact that she was raffling off or auctioning off one of her jackets, the jacket she got at the end of Derry Girls, for Laura Lynn. Well, the good news is it's been sold, and it's been sold for an incredible €22,197. Ba-ting, ching, ka-ching. And she was saying the last time she did something for Laura Lynn, they raised 5,000, and she was hoping that she'd top that. Well, she's quadrupled it and some. So well done, Nicola, and a great cause there. Just a reminder that Mick Kelly is coming in after 4 o'clock. Mick is from Grow It Yourself, GIY, down in Waterford, and he's giving us advice on all things gardening. There's a specific emphasis on growing it yourself, as in, you know, vegetables, basil, beetroot, rainbow chard, French beans, kale, lettuce, peas, carrots, radishes, spinaches, oriental greens, wild rocket and the rest. But Mick knows everything there is to know about growing stuff in the garden. And if you have any questions for him, ray@rte.ie. My attempts at growing my own haven't gone too well, so we'll be asking him about that. Anyway, Mick is going to be here after 4 o'clock. Sean has been on. This is interesting. You love this sort of thing. I love it too. Hope you are keeping well. Yes, thanks for asking. We are here. We're all keeping well here. My wife Louise and I are regular listeners to your radio programme. I have a quick query for you. Go on, Sean. Louise, my wife, showed me today a hairdryer still in perfect working order that she got as a present for her 21st. That's all of 39 years ago. Do the maths. That makes your wife, Louise, 60. Anyway, we're not worried about Louise's age, and I hope she isn't either. What we're worried about is the age of the hairdryer. a 39-year-old hairdryer in perfect working order. Can you match that? Sean Byrne has thrown down the hairdryer gauntlet there. And anybody... we started... That's it. We've inadvertently started the search for Ireland's oldest working hairdryer. We should have got the history of the hairdryer just to go along with that. Still on hair, this time facial hair. Paul Mescal got a mention yesterday because he's travelling down to Skull for the Fastnet Film Festival. And he's been spotted out and about sporting a moustache. A moustache. To grow a moustache. And I was saying upstairs because they're all fans of Paul Mescal up there, and they were giving their opinions as to whether they liked the moustache or didn't like the moustache. And I was saying it's probably for a part. And they were saying, no, maybe not. And I said, look up there his IMDb. That's the thing that gives you all the information about what actors are up to. It's not just good for what they've done in the past, but also what they're doing at present and maybe in the future. Anyway, it turns out that Paul Mescal is in pre-production for The History of Sound. And he's starring alongside Josh O'Connor, who played Prince Charles in The Crown. And they're going to play two young men from World War One who set out to record the lives, voices and music of their American countrymen. Sounds like an intro. The History of Sound. So they've sort of paved the way, whoever they're playing, for people like us now who broadcast to you and record people talking, all that sort of thing. So that's obviously Paul Mescal is sporting a moustache because he wants to look like a man from the First World War, we're thinking. Or maybe he just wants to grow a moustache. Isn't that the great thing about an actor? You can say, oh yeah, doing it for a role. Long hair, doing it for a role. Short hair, doing it for a role. Bald, doing it for a role. Still on actors, those big... hoo-ha recently when it was announced that Kylie and Jason were returning to Neighbours to save the sinking ship that is Neighbours. Well, maybe it's not, but anyway, they're returning. And of course, they were the stars back in the day and a big part of the reason that people tuned into Neighbours. Well, now the first photographs of Kylie and Jason on the set of Neighbours have appeared. And we thought we'd just play a little bit of this. This is hard to believe, but 34 years ago, they got married in Neighbours and it was watched by 22 million people. And this is a finale. I wonder, is it a finale? I wonder if it's really successful. Will they continue on with Neighbours? I don't know. So there's fans there and they're spotted and they're back and they're 34 years on or more. 5 on 551 RTE. This is fascinating. I read this in the Guardian today. World's largest bioreactors to grow no-kill artificial meat. So a US company has announced plans for the building of the world's largest bioreactor, which will grow more than 13,000 metric tons of chicken and beef a year. It's a complicated process with many steps, but the company Good Meat says that their product is real delicious meat with an identical nutritional profile to conventionally raised meat. And the big thing is that no chickens or cows are harmed in the making of this meat. So how do they do it? Well, the process begins by sourcing the best cells from healthy live chickens and cows. The company painlessly removes cells from healthy living animals. Then they select the best cells that would produce the most delicious and healthiest meat. This is obviously from their website. The cells are then immortalized. Don't know exactly what that means. They're then fed so they receive the same nutrients as a live chicken or a live cow would. Then a cultivator, in inverted commas, which is a machine similar to a beer fermenting tank, is used to grow the cells. La la you. Now I'm getting a bit, I don't know how you feel about this. The cells are then immersed in a growth medium, which provides amino acids and healthy fats. No hormones or antibiotics or GMOs are used. The cells then divide, creating good meat. Then after 4 to 6 weeks, harvesting can begin. And then they use moulding and 3D printing to serve up breast of chicken, burgers, steaks, whatever you're having yourself. So that's the future. That's the future. The man in charge reckons that younger people don't really care where they get their meat from. The CEO, he says, consumers want this and we're ready to take the next step to make this happen at commercial scale. Young people do not care that their meat is made in a giant stainless steel vessel, and people over the age of 35 are just insatiably curious about it. So that's the future, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. And then what happens when the chicken cells get mixed up with the cow cells, and then you have this very large flying cow around the place, and it takes over the world? Is that what ultimately happens, or is that just me, my imagination, and a sci-fi movie? That's the future. Speaking of movies, when we finish up on this one, A.A. Milne's classic children's book Winnie the Pooh is out of copyright. You're going, why are you telling us that? Well, it means that it's out in the public domain, so people can use Winnie the Pooh for whatever they want without seeking permission. That's, you know, so maybe Winnie the Pooh will be in charge of a big bioreactor, and the chicken cells and the cow cells will get mixed up, and Winnie will be responsible for sending this flying cow out into the world. No. It's not too far away from the truth, because already there's a horror movie in the works using Winnie the Pooh. Which is all very sad. It happens with music as well. When it runs out of copyright, anybody can use it for anything. Wasn't there a big hoo-ha about maybe the national anthem running out of copyright there a few years ago, and then somebody stepped in to save the day? So that's what caught our attention in the papers today. 5 on 5 on RadioRTE.ie. There is one more thing. Ellen DeGeneres has her last show. It's been broadcast in the States. She's done 3,000 episodes. And that's going to air today. The show was once the biggest daytime show in the US, but suffered after Ellen DeGeneres, she was putting out the image of being kind, and then there were allegations of a toxic work environment, and some of her employees came forward and made allegations against her. Anyway, among the 4,000 guests that Ellen has had on the show over the years, several Irish people have featured, including Keith Barry, Busker Ali Sherlock, we've had her on the show, Crystal Swing, we're on it, Jamie Dornan, Dermot Kennedy, Saoirse Ronan. They've all been guests of Ellen DeGeneres over the years. So just a reminder, this is Ellen with Ali, yeah?
When I saw a video of our next guest singing on the streets of Dublin, I knew I had to meet her from Cork, Ireland. Please welcome 12-year-old Ali Sherlock.
And getting on Ellen DeGeneres was a big thing. And I think Ali Sherlock is still reaping the benefits of that.
I think you've been there you go.
That's
times.
Ali. And then Crystal Swing.
I mean, coming on your show, Ellen, has been probably the biggest highlight of our life to date. Yeah. You know, it's
that's Mary there.
It's like a dream.
Before I left, you know, I sent hundreds of text messages to all my friends saying, you know, I'm going in the Ellen DeGeneres show, we're all going. And it was just amazing, the reaction, you know. They couldn't get over thinking, you know, that we're going to the US, one of the biggest.
That's Derek, yeah,
Derek, yeah. The esteem the Irish people hold you with Ellen, you know, everybody watches your show. So when we were invited on, we are absolutely the talking point of Ireland today, you know, to be on your show.
Well, I'm glad to be a part of that. I'm so happy.
There you go. Dervla, Derek and Mary.
She talks dirty in Spanish. Him in a sombrero while her in her pretty pink jammies.
It's nice to be nice all the same, Ellen. In public and in private. Now, Michelle Deneen says, here's a teapot gauntlet. My mum's everyday teapot is the one my parents got as a wedding present nearly 51 years ago. I thought we were talking hair dryers, not teapots, but we'll take that. And say hi to Kay and Oliver Rickard in Bellewstown. Don't have a hair dryer, but I do have a good blender that's 46 years old, still working. Now the blenders are in. To the TY students, that's a request there. My husband David still has an iron he received on his 21st birthday, still working as good as ever. He recently celebrated his 63rd birthday. Patricia in Ballyferman, what was going on in his world that he got an iron for his 21st? That's interesting. The iron is 42 years old. So we've a 39-year-old hairdryer, a 42-year-old what's that? Iron. Yes, and there's a blender there as well that's 46 years old. I also have a hairdryer that's 31 years old. Got it also for my 21st. It's a Revlon Big Shot. with hair diffuser and all. Regards, Charlotte and Kildare. Revlon, big shot with hair diffuser. And there's a request in the middle of all that to the TY students from Ballinrobe Community School in Mayo who are completing their 100km walk on the Camino today. Looking forward to having them all home tomorrow, probably tired and sore with the odd blister or two. And also to the Leaving Cert students, it's been a long slog. Well done to all. Nearly there, says Tim. So there. Now, I'll tell you about our quiz in a moment, but first, a bit of this. The great Something Happens Parachute on RT Radio 1.
Your
5 on 5 on Ray at RTE.ie. Sorry. Nolene Hickey's text just popped up there. Hi Ray, I have a set of Karmann heated rollers my mother gave me for my 21st. I'll be 70 this year. Do the maths. So that's 49-year-old rollers. That's the oldest thing we have. So, oh no, the teapot's 51 years old. Sorry. And then the blender's close third at 46 years old. Then there's the 42-year-old iron, the 40-year-old sandwich maker, the 31-year-old hairdryer, and then Sean's original hairdryer, which is 39, belongs to his wife Louise, who's 60, just so you know. My wife just blow-dried my hair. She's 66. Is this the oldest hairdryer in Ireland? Hey! A man, John. Jane is in good form as well. 39-year-old Philips food mixer, wedding present. Mixer survived. Marriage didn't. Oh. My hairdryer is a mere 31 years old, but I do have a 40-year-old toasted sandwich maker. That's Lynn in Sandyford in Dublin. I was trying to think of the oldest domestic appliance I have, and they're not. None of them are very old. I don't know what that says about me. But they're great. We started off with a hairdryer. Now we've a whole plethora of domestic appliances and a teapot thrown in for good measure. So keep them coming in. Keep us entertained. And try and do like John and Jane did and make them a little bit entertaining. That'd be great. Now, let's tell you about our quiz. It's our Real and Dear quiz that happens every day. And every day we need two of you to come on and answer three questions each on bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And there is a prize. And this week it's a two-night break in the Fota Island Resort, which is down in Cork. It's on an island and it's just 8 miles from Cork City. So you can pop in and out of the city if you like, or you can just hang around and go in the swimming pool, the world-class spa, the Cove, which is a fine dining restaurant, or you can go walking, go walkabouts in Fota Island. And you can find out more about the five-star Fota Island Resort at fotaisland.ie, fotaisland.ie. So two people after 4 o'clock. And if you want to get on, you have to answer our qualifying question, which is this. The American singer with hits like Born in the USA, also known as The Boss, announced Irish gigs this week. What is his name? American singer with hits like Born in the USA, also known as The Boss. That's not the name of a song. That's just a bit of information about him. He announced Irish gigs this week. What is his name? 0818715925. 0818715925. Good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, back in 2016, Ross Good decided to leave his job and become a stay-at-home dad. S-A-H-D. Isn't that what they call them?
That's
Ross?
It.
Yes.
That's it, stay-at-home dad.
Now, according to an article which Ross featured in the Irish Times on Tuesday, recent figures show that just 11,000 fathers took full responsibility of the day-to-day needs of their children and officially are stay-at-home dads. So, Ross, you're very much in the minority in what you're doing.
We really are.
Yeah,
we really are.
Thanks so much for coming in.
No problem. Thanks for inviting me in.
Yeah, and you have your two charges with you.
I have my two monkeys outside. Right. Yeah, how realistic being a stay-at-home dad is that my wife is at home working away, has her calls from at home, and at short notice, it is very difficult to find people to jump in to mind your kids.
Yeah.
So the original plan was to try and do that. But at the last minute, we just said, you know what? I'm just going to have to bring you with me.
Yeah, so it's
reality.
Maya and L.
Mia.
Sorry.
And L.
L, right.
Yeah,
right.
As in the letter L, exactly.
Yes, yeah, Mia and L. And what ages are they?
Mia has just gone 10, 2 weeks back.
Right.
Which is making me feel pretty old. And L will be 7 in July.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you came to the stay-at-home dad thing. It was sort of maybe on your mind, but then it was nearly forced upon you. Is that fair enough to say?
That is fair enough, yeah. It was definitely in the end forced upon me, but About a year and a bit before that, in my previous life, I'd been a financial advisor and was doing pretty okay. But then, as we all know, the backside of the world fell apart. So I had to rethink what I was doing. And at that stage then, I was working with a really up-and-coming Irish tech startup company. And but in the tech startup world, your money would be a bit less than what would be elsewhere. And that's part of the game. So at that stage, if we were to discuss the possibility of me becoming the stay-at-home dad, at that point, it was purely financial. And we did have that conversation. Yeah, right. Of course we did. And it petrified me. I was like, no, I can't give up work. Are you mad?
And Mel, so you did the figures and Mel was earning more than you.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly it, yeah. So it was...
But you loved what you did and it was part of who you were. And so the conversation happened, but you said...
I pushed back straight away. Okay. I was like, there's no way I could do that. And for numerous reasons. One, money. Two, didn't want to let the camaraderie that you have with work. And then I guess three, with the benefit of hindsight, I think I was scared. It was fear because my youngest wasn't even born at that stage. My eldest was about 3 and a bit. And previous to becoming a dad, I never had any experience with young kids at all, ever.
So you weren't an uncle or anything like that?
No, I have one brother and he doesn't have any kids. Right. And like a friend's bar one or two when I was in my kind of late 20s, early 30s, I think maybe one or two of them had. Yeah. So I never had any experience with it. Right. And then the thought of actually being in control of a baby and a 4-year-old from start to finish literally petrified me then.
The man thing and bringing home the bacon and being the main breadwinner, did that enter into it at all?
That old nugget, huh? Yeah. Put my club on my back and walk out the door and bring home the meat. Do you know, at the very start, it would have had, in the back of my mind, okay. Of course it did. I'd be lying if I said it didn't. But I read, interestingly enough, now this is after a while of being a stay-at-home dad. I read a report that it kind of put a value on what a stay-at-home dad in terms of salary or potential salary. And when I read what it was, I kind of went, that's my value.
Yeah.
You know, because...
But that'd be the same for stay-at-home mums as well.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
We had that chat with Barbara Scully the other day and it's about time that society woke up to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, so people would be interested to know why you were forced into it then. It was health.
It was health, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So at the ripe age of 36, I found out I had multiple signs of heart disease in both sides of the heart at a pretty advanced stage.
Were you symptomatic?
Yes and no.
All right, go on.
No, in the sense that before I ran 2 5Ks in the week before I went in with the pains.
Right.
So that's the no part. The yes part would be that I am, for as long as I can remember, I always had palpitations on and off. And then just before I got to a certain point and I was brought in, because the cholesterol was too high from the doctor, that was what flagged it from the first case. And then had the CT angiogram. And when the doctor told me those words, and I'll never forget those words, I think it accelerated.
What did he say to you?
So we're kind of sitting the same distance as we are apart at the moment. And he looked up and he just goes, remind me again, Ross, what age you were. And in my head, I thought, this can't be good if he's asking that straight off the cuff. So I said, 36, which it was at the time. And he just looked at me straight, deadpan. He said, you have multiple signs of heart disease in both sides of your heart.
Right.
And I was like, kind of like, you what now? Came as a shock.
And he would have asked you these questions. And excuse me if I sound like a doctor.
No.
Is there a family history?
Yes, doc. There is, actually.
There is, yeah. So
there is a strong family history on my dad's side of the family. So he, dad is still with us, thankfully. He's 73, but he had a triple bypass when he was 46. He's had maybe 2 or 3 stents since. He obviously had a major heart attack for the triple bypass, and then he's had a few minor heart attacks, and he's still there. He's still going strong. So, but all his siblings had it. Like, there was bypasses, triple bypasses, more bypasses than the M50, if I'm honest.
You knew it was coming down the road, so to speak.
Yeah, like, it was definitely in the post. And I suppose when I'm in my 20s, you're fairly headstrong and you're bulletproof in terms of, that's not going to happen to me. And I kind of thought, like, 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be okay, but like not 36.
So you got the diagnosis and then you're saying that it accelerated the whole thing? Well, because of stress, was it? Worry, yeah.
Yeah, I, looking back now with fresh eyes, I think it was the kind of psychosomatic that when you actually heard those words, because at that stage I was told, you're coming back in next week for an MRI, which would have been probably standard for someone of my age, because he said, you're not in any immediate danger, but we want to get this looked at.
Yeah.
And I think within those 4 or 5 days, yeah, panic would have set in, the mind would have run into a knot, because I was looking at my, you know, my baby was only 6 months old at that stage, not even actually, because it was a few months before, and my wife and my eldest daughter, and I was thinking, this could be it, like, I'm not ready to go yet. And I think it actually accelerated things, because what happened then was, the only way I can describe it to you is, imagine if you had a balloon in your hand and you had long nails and you're constantly doing that. You're constantly squeezing it. That was the pressure that I was feeling around the heart area. And then literally someone got a match inside my chest and lit it up under the heart. And when that happened, I just looked at Mel, who was standing there, and I said, yeah, we need to go now. Like, right now, let's go.
And they kept you in and put the stents in.
They kept me in overnight and angiogrammed first thing next morning. And then, the cardiologist, and this is a different cardiologist, so this was in Vincent's, and an amazing cardiologist. But he just said, yeah, you've got a bit of work to do there, pal. He said, you're staying here tonight, you'll see me tomorrow, and we'll get you sorted. Right. And that was 2016. So 4 went in.
So then you had to reappraise your life. You're 36, and when that happens to you, I would imagine your whole life flashes in front of you, and what your priorities are,
yeah,
what you want to do with the rest of your life, because you value it more, do you?
Yeah, it's a bit of a cliche, and you know, you probably get banded around more on TV and stuff like that, but like, it makes you think. That's for sure. It's probably the best way of putting it. I'm not too sure if I could say my whole life flashed before my eyes.
Okay.
But it definitely made things, you had to have an alternative look at things. So that's what kind of, it took a while now. It wasn't all plain sailing when I first got out. I was back in and out a few times. I thought there was heart attacks happening, and I thought it was hard, but it was actually, it was a panic attack. And I'd never had a panic attack before. And by all accounts, they mimic each other to a certain extent. And I suppose the context of where I had come from, work was done in the heart. It was quite a lot of work done. I was at home. This feeling was going on. And I ended up in and out of hospital maybe 3 or 4 times, in the ambulance, which in front of the kids wasn't nice.
No.
Thankfully, it wasn't a heart attack. You know, and I'm not saying thankfully it was a panic attack, because if anyone's had them, they're horrible. But in the grand scheme of things, they're not a heart attack, from my point of view, at that stage.
Okay, so then yourself and Mel sat down again. Did you? At what stage did you decide, okay, I'll have a go at this, minding the children and giving up work?
Yeah, good question. So I went back to work actually for a small bit, but I was in sales and account management. And in sales, if you're selling, it's obvious. If you're not selling, it's obvious. And because there's no hiding place.
Okay, if you're not 100%,
you're bringing the money. If you're not selling, you're not bringing the money.
There's
no hiding place. And the lads I worked with were absolutely brilliant, But they didn't want to put pressure on me, and I wanted to go back to try and get myself back into the routine.
Yeah.
But it was too early. I was all consumed about what was going on. So then we went, I stood down from the job, which was a hard decision, but it turned out in hindsight to be the right thing to do. So then at the weekend, we were at the zoo, and we're walking around, and at that stage, previous to the stents, I used to bring Mia when she was young, go running with her in the buggy, and I'd have the dog, and I'd be pushing the buggy and the dog. Not pushing the dog, obviously. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we were in the zoo, and Elle was only a baba, but Mia got tired. And so we'd swapped. We put Mia into the buggy, and she looked huge in it. And she was only not even 4. And I was looking at her, and the penny dropped. And I was thinking, that stage of me pushing her around, you know, in the buggy is gone already. And I was thinking, that's way too fast. And I was like, why in God's name would I not do this? Like, if I looked back at the age I am now and looked back and if I didn't take the opportunity when I had the chance to do it, I would have been really annoyed at me, because it goes by so fast, number one. And it's just been brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, there's been ups and downs, of course. I mean, kids are kids, they're going to push your buttons. But yeah.
Listening to you there, and I'm thinking to myself, there are people at home going, well, why don't you have a woman on and talk to her about? And I suppose the facts are, and we outlined them at the beginning, is that you are in the minority by a good
A good stretch.
So you are still a bit of an oddity because you're in the minority, and that's why we're chatting to you today. And of course, you have the story of your heart as well.
It is changing, though, which is good.
Yeah.
It is changing. Like, there's, I don't know, where, sorry if I cut in, you're going to
go ahead.
Like, I can see any dad I know wants to be a hands-on dad. There's no dads from my generation and a bit older. There's not one person who I know who has kids has said, oh, I'm going to stay away and let the kids go to bed. They want to be involved because the bottom line is we're parents too.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the way I see it. And that there are other people who have different opinions on that, which is fair enough. But
what do you get back out of it? It's not as if you're...
You know what you get? you get grey hair, no hair.
No, you don't. You get so much out of it. And that's why I feel sorry for, like, men of my dad's generation.
Yeah.
You know, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, nothing was expected of them and they delivered. And they missed out big time.
They missed out. And
by not being hands-on.
It was just the way it was done back then. Yeah. And... like, that's just, you can't blame anybody for having that mindset when they're older generation, because that's all they knew. But I'm delighted to see, like, even in the school where the girls are, the pickups, there's so many dads doing it, collections. And it's not just because mum's not there. You know, mum's gone away or mum's sick.
It's because dads want it.
It's because dads want it.
Isn't that brilliant?
And that is the difference. And it's brilliant to see.
Yeah.
And when I started doing this, I didn't set out to champion this type of message, but it was kind of a buck the trend and it did raise a few eyebrows. But to be fair, from 95% of the people, they were just like, this is brilliant.
And what about you inside your head then? You know, about the fact that Mel is the one who's the breadwinner
now. Yeah, she is. Do you know what? Mel, my wife, is an amazing high achiever. She's brilliant at work. She's brilliant at the job that she does and the role she performs. I think even if I was at the highest level of that, like, that's the level I wouldn't get to. And I'm actually quite comfortable with it because she is an amazing person and I'm quite lucky to have.
And what about understanding the role of women then over the years? You have a greater appreciation of that now.
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of things that, you know, they don't get credit for. When I say they, sorry, as in stay-at-home parents is what I meant.
But it was they were predominantly women.
Yeah, and still
is predominantly women, yeah.
I was just talking to somebody earlier on and I was just thinking, so look, back then, you know, if you were a woman and you had a career of sorts and then you had babies, your career was gone. It was just, that was it. That's just the way it was. It was done. Imagine how many amazing female brains are just cooked up inside four walls. I only had this conversation earlier on.
Yeah, you see, it's a difficult one though, Ross, because what stay-at-home parents do is hugely important.
It's hugely
not
important.
Not just for their immediate family, but for society.
Yeah, I agree.
So, you can't say those brains were wasted because they weren't in a way, you know.
I wasn't getting on that they were wasted, but it's
a difficult conversation.
It is. It has been and probably will be for a long time.
Yeah. But I think by reading about you and you chatting here today, it opens up the conversation for people.
Yeah.
There may be somebody listening today.
And I hope so.
And they might go home this evening and go, I was listening to your man on the radio today.
Yeah.
And I was thinking that maybe that's something I might want to do. What do you think, Jane or whoever?
With having 6 years experience under my belt now, right, being a stay-at-home dad, Jesus, yeah.
Yeah.
Can I say Jesus?
You said it's too late.
Yes, absolutely.
And you've sort of a plan now to do something for dads.
I'm hoping to. So having been like, I'm calling it the Good Dad Academy. And what I hope to aim to do is to actually help dads be more present with their family so that they can enjoy that time that they have to the absolute maximum. And I mentioned on or touched on it earlier on because time goes by so fast. Like, I mean, me has gone 10, as I said. And I'm thinking, how in God's name did that happen? And then at the same time, from the last 6 years, the nuggets I've gotten from being a stay-at-home parent, what I've seen, what I've gone through, both, you know, emotionally, mentally, physically, I've learnt off the kids, they've learnt off me, hopefully, at some point. But throughout those 6 years and being the dad, I've gone to so many parent and toddler groups. And I think...
So you want to share this with other men, is that...
Well, I think so, yeah, because there's so little out there for dads, by dads, or even... it doesn't have to even be by dads, but like there were so many groups out there and I was the only dad in that group. Now, that didn't bother me in the slightest. If I'm honest, it was just a learning curve. I was a parent and I wanted to be there and I learned off the mums, usually. But a lot of dads wouldn't do it or don't do it or whatever the reason is, they're not there.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe traditionally they're still out there doing the work, the 9 to 5, but I'd like to have events and activities that dads can actually get involved with to help grow their bond with their children.
Okay.
And
well, maybe when you bring it to the next level, you might come back in and talk to us about it.
I would absolutely love to. Yeah, I would absolutely love to, Ray.
Yeah, for the moment, Roscoe, thanks so much for coming in. Mind yourself, Ross.
Cheers, Ray. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And there's a pressure cooker there, a lady shave, a good mixer, a food mixer, a sewing machine. They're all coming in. I'll get to those after 4 o'clock. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we spoke to auctioneer Dominic Daly, and he was telling us about islands he had for sale off the coast of Ireland. Very interesting chat. We got a number of texts and emails afterwards about islands, but one caught our eye, this particular one. Hi, Ray. My family used to own the largest inland island in the British Isles, Ilan Mór on Lough Derg. It's 280 acres and can be seen clearly on any map of Ireland. I have some great stories, one about the time Gene Kelly, Singing in the Rain Gene Kelly, stayed with us. Regards, Karen Winston. And Karen joins me in studio. Good afternoon, Karen.
Hi, Ray. Nice to be here.
So your family owned an island?
We did, yeah. But there's a history to it. It's
I know. I'm slagging
my grandmother was actually born on the island.
Right.
So, now,
before we start, let's locate the island for people, right?
Okay.
So it's in the middle of the Lough Derg, which is on the Shannon.
Right in the centre of Lough Derg. And I always say it's not the holy Lough Derg.
Yes,
the other Lough Derg,
the big Lough Derg.
Yeah.
And it's between Tipperary and Clare.
It's bordered by Tipperary, Clare and Galway.
Yes, and if you were sending a letter to it, what county would you address it to?
Clare.
Clare.
It's officially in the parish of Whitegate.
Right.
County Clare.
Up until, 150 years more, it was inhabited?
Yeah, it's still inhabited.
By one person, yeah. Mm-hmm. But was it your grandmother?
My grandmother was born on the island.
Right. And how many families would have been on the island at that stage?
At one stage there were 22 families living on it. But when my grandmother was there, they actually had a school on the island. So there were about 6 families, I think, around about that time.
Mm.
And I can remember clearly her giving out stink about the fact that the school teacher lived with them. And she felt she could never get away from the teacher.
Yes.
But yeah, they farmed it and fished and...
So your dad then was...
So my dad spent all his childhood down in Lough Derg, and his grandparents at that point were still living on the island, and he absolutely loved it.
Mm.
And he spent, as I say, all his childhood. And
he did well for himself?
He did very well for himself, yes, yes, yes. Yes.
And
life was good.
Fast forward to the 1980s.
Well... Why fast forward to 1980? You're missing out on a lot.
No, but we just want to get the full... And then we'll go back. It doesn't have to be chronological.
Okay, so the 1980s were not kind to a lot of people and they were quite unkind to us.
Oh, yes, sorry. So I know why you're not fast forwarding. Yes, so when did he buy the island then?
So he bought the island in 1962.
Yes, sorry about that. Yes.
He bought the island in 1962 and most of it, as I say, was owned by his uncle. So that was easy enough. And then there were various different people who had, you know, field here, a couple of acres there, and he just bought up all the various bits.
Right.
And yeah, so... Yeah.
So you then holidayed there? Or?
My dad spent every weekend, 50 of the 52 weekends
down on
the island.
Right.
Because he farmed it. He grew barley, which he sold Guinnesses and won awards for it. Very proud of that. And he had cattle and eventually he had a pheasant shoot, a commercial pheasant shoot. So it was like a business for him.
And what are your memories of it?
Oh, God, it was the most amazing place, Ray. I mean, it's so hard to imagine. Well, that was one of the things. you know, there was absolutely nothing to interrupt your imagination as a child. There was no phones. We had no electricity. Our running water in the house was pumped up from the lake. No proper bathroom. We had a loo, obviously, but no shower or anything. Did all your washing in the lake. And in the early days, we had gas. Everything was gas. So we had a gas fridge. We had gas lights, right. Those old gas lights with the mantle that you lit with the match, and woe betide you touch the mantle or it would disintegrate. And then we got very sophisticated, and we built on a piece to the house, and we got a generator.
Uh-huh.
And then we had electricity and we had hot water.
Okay.
And that was, you know, luxury.
So your dad loved it and was proud of it and invited people there then.
He invited people, and lots of people just kind of ended up there.
What, by accident?
Well, yeah. A lot of the time they did. Yeah.
So we mentioned Gene Kelly.
Gene Kelly. My mum used to always insist that we spent a couple of days in the Lakeside Hotel in Killaloe during the summer, because it wasn't really a holiday for her. It was hard work for her.
On the island.
On the island, yes, yeah. There was no, like, nothing, no mod cons of any description. And so we were in the Lakeside Hotel, and Dad was in the bar, and Gene Kelly was staying at the time, and they got chatting, and Gene Kelly was saying to him, oh, you know, so-and-so, one of the local guys, was taking him out to this island, Ilan Moore, and so Dad kind of was listening to all of this, grinning. So he just said, look, you know, that's actually my island. Why don't you come? So he ended up staying with us for about 3 nights.
Wow.
Mm.
We had his wife, his Patricia Ward Kelly on.
That's right.
Great stories. Stories about
He was super. He was so nice. And he was telling us all stories about, you know, in Hollywood and filming with some swimmer who worked opposite him in one of the movies. And she was so tall. They all had to wear built-up shoes and everything. And telling us ghost stories at night. Terrifying us.
What a childhood you had.
I know. But we had, like at Easter, we used to have, if any of the local farmers had a ewe that had three lambs, we'd get the third lamb.
Right.
So we'd look after the lamb over Easter, hand feed it and hand rear it. And there was an Easter bush that the Easter bird used to come to every year and lay Easter eggs for us.
Yeah.
And we had a donkey that we were allowed, when I think back on it, we were allowed to pack up. This is when we would be like 7 or 8. We would put sleeping bags. It's my sister Brona and I and whoever we had down. And we'd have frying pans and sausages. And we were allowed to go across the island.
On the donkey?
On the donkey.
Right.
And make a little campfire and light the fire and cook the sausages.
Brilliant.
I know. I mean, you can do that.
It's Enid Blyton stuff, isn't it?
It really is Enid Blyton stuff.
So let's drop another few names then. So we dropped Gene Kelly's name. He's probably the biggest, is he? Is he the biggest name?
Yeah, he would be.
And politicians were?
Yeah. Paddy Hillary.
Yeah. Former president.
He used to come and shoot pheasants with my dad. Liam Cosgrave.
Yeah. Taoiseach.
The fabulous artist Jim Fitzpatrick.
Ah, yes, who did a lot of the Thin Lizzy albums.
Oh, yeah. He's a friend of mine to this day.
Amazing, yeah.
Hollywood producer Herb Wright.
Don't know him.
No, he did some of the Star Wars movies.
Oh, right.
He was going to do a movie here in the 80s called The Lion of Ireland about the life of Brian Boru.
Right.
Which never happened.
Now, here's the thing. You brought us on to Brian Boru, and there's a big name to drop.
Yes.
Because the story goes that after the Battle of Clontarf, that they were bringing him down to Killaloe to bury him, and they got a boat at Banagher, and they were making their way down the Shannon, and it was during the summer. It was very, very warm, and Brian Boru's body began to decay.
Mm-hmm.
So the story goes that they, instead of going all the way to Killaloe, they pulled in at Ilan Moore and buried him there, and that's
the legend.
That's the legend. Right.
And there is a tall standing stone, about 8 feet tall, on the shore. And that has always been kept whitewashed. And that's supposed to be where Brian Boru is buried.
Uh-huh. Right.
But there's the ruins of a monastery on the island as well that dates back to, I don't know, maybe the 4th, 5th century. because we did find some carved stones.
Now we'll switch on to the 80s. And sorry about that, because I'm looking at a headline here from the Irish Times, May 14, 1987. Industrialist buys island for £500,000. So that's when your dad had to sell it.
Yes.
Yeah. And he sold it to a German industrialist.
Yes.
And he still owns it.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
And they run it now as a commercial shoot.
Right.
So it looks very different now to when we were there, because it's, my dad always, because he farmed it and had cattle, the fields were always beautifully manicured and the hedgerows were always perfect. But now it's, you would look at it and think it was very overgrown. But in actual fact, it's just good cover for the pheasants, because dad used to keep birds as well, like exotic birds. We had a big pen beside the house, and he had silver pheasants and golden pheasants and peacocks and
reeds. You had peacocks walking around as well?
Yeah, we did.
Huh?
And we used to have to, we had glass doors, and we used to have to put newspaper on the bottom of the doors in around this time of the year.
Because they'd see their reflection.
Yes, and they would, we lost one.
They'd start
one.
To row with themselves. Yeah.
They used to peck at the glass. We did lose one.
Right.
Peacock. But yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. Absolutely amazing. And there was a family called the Tiernans who lived there at the time, who James Tiernan knew the lake better than anybody. But he used to feed the birds in the evening. He'd come with a bucket and he'd say, come on, chaps. And they'd all appear.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. It was absolutely amazing.
Idyllic. So there's one man you're saying living, and he's the caretaker of the island, is he?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And he lives on the island.
On his own.
Beautiful. On his own. He has a beautiful garden, grows all his own vegetables, and he's fabulous.
Is there fish in Lough Derg?
My mum was a great fisherwoman.
Right.
And you dare not go out in the boat fishing with her, because you would be in the boat for 7 hours.
And then she'd cook it when she came back in?
Yeah, we used to have perch and trout
And there's Jean Kelly there having one of your mum's trout, and there's the...
Yeah, exactly.
The peacocks.
And a big gin and tonic
the window,
to go
and
with
the peacock
it.
Outside.
Yeah. Hello!
I think you've painted a wonderful picture of your childhood, Cairn Weston.
It was magic.
Winston. I was going to call you Weston. That's a different name completely. Cairn Winston. And the next time you're on the Shannon and you're in Lough Derg and you see Elon Moore, you'll know the story of it now. And there it is. And wave to the man on it. What's his name? Can you give us his first name?
Francis.
Wave to Francis there. Cairn, thanks so much for coming in and sharing your story with us. That's amazing.
You're welcome.
Thank you. That's it. It's not it from us. I'm going to have to take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now we're back in the mainland after that trip out to the island. And an ish toshin on the Preve Skelton in Ota, Eileen Nicahan. Gramagad, Eileen. Thank you very much. 5 on 551 ray@rte.ie. Now we started off with Sean's email about a hairdryer, which is 39 years old, and then it starts from there. I have a hairdryer for over 45 years, also a food mixer and carving knife, both 44 years old, says Anne in Dublin. And my mother, says Maggie, got a Singer sewing machine for her 21st, and she'll be 90 in September, still uses it. Do the maths. 69-year-old sewing machine. I bought my Kenwood chef mixer pre-1986, still baking 10 cakes a week for a successful cafe. It squeaks, but works well, says Anne. Bit of oil there, Anne, or WD-40. I have a pressure cooker, which my two sisters gave us when we got engaged in 1969. That's 53 years, Ray. Still going strong, even though one of the handles fell off. The marriage is still going too, says Anna. And my deceased ex-husband, only died last year, sorry about that, bought me a lady shave 42 years ago when I was 18, which I still have and in good working order, says Kay. There's a story behind that, Kay, which you'll have to share with us sometime. I have what was known at the time as a good mixer. It's a Prestige egg whisk nowadays. Receipt dated 26/8/1954 with 5-year guarantee. Still working perfectly well at 68. That's an old one there. What's the other one there? Is 69, 68. I own a Krupp's food mixer in a local draw back. Oh, sorry. I won a Krupp's food mixer in a local draw back in the day. I'm still using it. I won it 42 years ago. I'm a bit shocked after working out the years. Anyway, I'm here making Battenberg cakes, trying to get out early to enjoy the weather. Lorraine, also known as the Bacon Goddess. Ah, yeah, Lorraine from the Daisy Cottage Farm. And we spoke to her about Battenberg cakes, and they were made famous recently by Leo Varadkar, who had it as his birthday cake. So there's a list there, an honours list. We'll get to that before the end of the programme, of all the various things and how old they are. But right now we have to do our quiz, Reeling in the Ears. And we have two quizzers standing by, and one of them will win a prize. And this week it's a two-night break in the Fota Island Resort down in Cork, just 8 miles from Cork City. They have a swimming pool, world-class spa, fine dining restaurant. It's a five-star resort. And golf course there as well, and loads of walking tracks. You can find out more, fotaisland.ie, fotaisland.ie. And if Elizabeth McCarthy wins, she won't have far to go. Isn't that right, Elizabeth McCarthy?
That's right,
some
money down the road.
So you're in Carrigaline, but you're out for a walk. Where are you?
I am, I'm down in Crosshaven at the moment.
Nice, and what's the weather like?
Amazing. It's split cloudy, but it's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, and supposed to get better over the coming days, which is great. You're on a day off.
I am.
From
I
where?
Am from Vincent's Charity Shop in Carrigaline.
Aha, right.
Yeah.
That's an interesting place to work. You must get all sorts of mad stuff into you.
Yeah, we do. We get a fortune.
Yeah.
Our donations are brilliant.
Yeah. And then is it people clearing out old houses when people die, or what sort of stuff is it?
It could be that, or it could be just people moving. It could be people just emptying their houses.
Yeah.
Doing a bit of a clear out.
And do you take everything still, or are you, like, for example, I heard at one stage that there were too many books around.
There's too many books at the moment. We have loads in the back. But
right.
Once they go down, we will be taking more.
Right. And what's the most common book that's donated? Any idea off the top of your head?
Oh, I wouldn't have
no.
a clue.
Because
no.
I remember at one stage it was 50 Shades of Grey. Was the one
we have had a couple of them in now, plus the board game and everything.
Yeah,
so.
There's a board game, is there?
There sure is.
Is there, right? I didn't know that. 50 Shades of Grey, the board game. Right, I'll let my imagination go off of that for a
there
while.
There you go, yeah. A nice in.
And tell us about the German teddies.
Oh, the Hummel, that's what they were called. They were made during the war.
Yeah.
They were beautiful.
And you got them in.
Beautiful.
You got, like, they could be worth a bit, couldn't they?
They were. I know, I'm not sure what they were actually worth, but we sold the two of them for €50.
Right.
And they weren't on the shelf about a half an hour.
Aha, yeah. Somebody spotted that they were onto a good thing there. Yeah, yeah. Okay, you're up against Mary Rose Fitzsimons from Blackrock in Dublin. How are you doing, Mary Rose?
Hi, Ray.
You're on the school run.
I am indeed. And one off and one waiting for.
Right, okay. So who and who?
I have Alana in the back who's doing her homework because she can't hear you. And then Thomas will be coming to join us soon. I'll meet him in the car park.
And as he's in first year, is he? Thomas?
He's in first year, yeah.
And what class is Alana in?
She's in first class.
Right. And you run a Pilates studio and holistic centre.
We do, in Blackrock.
So you and your hubby are...
Me and my hubby.
Right.
He's in work at the moment. He's got the radio on.
Yeah, yeah. So are you both instructors?
No, I'm a holistic therapist. So I'm a massage therapist and reflexologist.
Aha, uh-huh, right.
And he's an instructor and instructor trainer.
Right. And did you meet through the Pilates and all that?
No, because we met through... We were both doing nutrition at the time, nearly 20 years ago. And he started Pilates shortly after that. I was doing massage at the time. So we were along the same road.
Yeah. Now, during lockdown, you grew your hair.
I did.
How long?
Very long.
Right.
Right down my back.
And then what did you do?
I cut it all off last week for Laura Lynn.
Ah, brilliant.
And Rapunzel.
So you said to your friends, I'm cutting my hair off, donate to me. And then you donate the actual hair to Rapunzel, and they make wigs for people, don't they?
They do. They make wigs for children.
Yes. And it has to be a certain length before they'll take it.
It has to be at least 14 inches, and it has to be virgin hair. It can't be dyed.
Right. Right. A lot of stipulations there.
Yeah.
So how did you feel about that? That's a big thing to do.
Oh, before, about 6 or 7 years ago.
Right.
So when lockdown started, I said, you know what, I'm going to do this again now.
Right.
So.
And it's a good time of the year to do it. So are you right up now? Are you right up short or?
Shoulder length.
Sure. Oh, well, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. That's a great thing
to
do.
I have plenty of hair. It's fine.
Good. Good. Give me some. Okay. Right. So three questions each on clips you will hear. If you go for a long clip, it's easy enough. You get 1 point for that. If a shorter clip is more difficult, so you get 2 points, Elizabeth and Mary Rose. And then whoever has the most points is the winner. If it's a draw on points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both. Here we go. Okay. Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Out for a walk in Crosshaven. The year is 2014, 8 years ago. And we're starting at the movies. Would you like a long clip or a short clip?
A short, please.
Short clip, okay. This adaptation of a best-selling fiction book starred Ben Affleck as Nick, a man accused of murdering his wife Amy, played by Rosamund Pike. Can you name the movie? And here is your short clip.
Nick loved a girl.
Gone Girl?
Oh yeah, you have it there. You don't
yeah,
even need
I
it.
I know from the, no, I know from okay, the description.
You know from the description. Gone Girl is the correct answer. Right, 2 points for you. Based on the book, the same name by Gillian Flynn. Okay, Mary Rose, Elizabeth isn't hanging around, is she? So 2014 at the movies, long or short?
Short, please.
Okay, 2014, this movie was about a bear in a blue trench coat. Warm the Heart starred Hugh Bonneville and Nicole Kidman. Can you name it? Here we go.
Well, I have left is my art.
Paddington, you got there. You go. You have it. Right. Okay. Maybe we won't play the clips at all today. Right. So you're on two as well. Good start. Now, Elizabeth, back to you. Music from 2014.
I'll go a short.
Short. Okay. You need to hear this. Obviously, this mm-hmm. song was number one for 12 weeks. Can you name the song or the singer? It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.
Happy.
It is.
Yeah.
You'll be happy to know you're right. 2 points there by Pharrell. Happy. And that was the song of that summer, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah. To you, Mary Rose, 2014, music, long or short?
Short again, please.
Short again. Okay. 2014, this song was a huge hit for this English band. Can you name the band or the song? I don't care. Go on and
tear me apart. Is it Coldplay?
It is Coldplay. They all sound the same. No, who said that? Who said that? Sky Full of Stars. You get 2 points of that. Okay, so you're good and even. So it's 4 versus 4. Down to the last question, Elizabeth. It's news and current affairs in 2014. Do you want a long clip or a short clip?
Well, we have to go short.
Short, okay.
Yeah.
In 2014, a referendum was held in Scotland that divided the country. What were they voting on? Here's your clip by way of a clue.
What I think is already absolutely clear from the results we have so far tonight is that Scotland has changed.
Was it independence?
It was independence, yes.
Yes.
2 points. Clean sheet. 6 out of 6. Now, Mary Rose, it's all up to you. Do you bring us to a tiebreaker or does Elizabeth walk home with the prize? And she could actually walk to the prize from where she is. So, news and current affairs, you sort of have to go short, don't you?
Short, yes.
Yeah, okay. In 2014, a fundraising craze went viral, which involved participants filming themselves spilling water over their heads. What was it called? No, I'll give you a let me play this out anyway. It's just for the crack. So here is Dahi O'Shea gearing up to do it on the Rose Tralee. Dahi.
And if I don't do it, I give €100 to the motor neuron disease. And if I do it, I give 20.
All right. So what was he doing?
The ice bucket challenge.
He was doing the ice bucket challenge.
I remember doing it.
Yeah, yeah, and there were raised loads of thousands of euro were raised for motor neuron disease back in 2014. Okay, so it's a draw, Elizabeth and Mary Rose, which means we have to go to the tiebreak question. You were asked this before you went on air. I'm going to repeat it now for our listeners. And whoever gets the closest to the correct answer is today's winner. According to Google Maps, how long would it take you to cycle from the Blarney Stone in County Cork to the Rock of Cashel in County Tipperary, both in Munster? Your guess, Elizabeth?
Was 4 hours and 50 minutes.
4 hours and 50 minutes. And your guess, Mary Rose?
It was 3 hours 15.
The correct answer is 5 hours and 14 minutes.
Aww.
Oh, that's right. Hard luck, Mary Rose. Listen, we'll send you out a couple of Radar Show mugs, one for you, one for Joe. Or you can give them to the children if you like. And great talking to you. Mind yourself. See you, Mary Rose. Bye.
Thanks,
bye. Elizabeth.
Thank you so much. I'm absolutely delighted.
Yeah, you're off to Photo Island. And I believe you're going to bring your sister Norma.
I sure am. We're having a girly weekend away.
Great. Well, enjoy it and well done.
And thank you so much. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. See you, Elizabeth. Well bye. Did. Well done.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Show on RTE Radio 1. Email
ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
There we go. Sean Collins, he's a fan of Only Fools and Horses. He's making this his own, though, fair enough. He says, "Hi, Ray, I have a sweeping brush that's over 40 years old and in use every day. It's only had 15 new handles, 15 new heads. It's even won awards." That's Sean Collins. Wasn't that Trigger from Only Fools and Horses? Maybe Sean has the same story. Now, Mick Kelly joins us in studio. Mick is from Grow It Yourself down in Waterford, and he has set us a challenge to grow 12 vegetables in 12 weeks. And he was telling us the last time I was in, you can save over €400 a year by growing your own. And good to see you again, Mick.
Good to see you. How are you doing?
Not great, I have to admit.
Oh, God, tell me.
No, well, I was busy, and then eventually, about 3 weeks ago, I finally got around to doing what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And I chose 6 out of the 12.
Very good.
Yeah.
Good start.
I got the compost out of the shed, put them into the trays that you gave me.
Yeah.
Put them, half a centimetre below the soil.
Yeah, mainly.
About there, right?
Depends on the veg, but that's a good rule of thumb. Yeah.
And I put them on a table which is near a window which is in sunlight.
Yeah.
And I water them every second day.
Okay.
Nothing. No, sorry. There is the most minute, you would need a magnifying glass to see, the Oriental greens came up just the tiniest little bit. But the basil, the beetroot, the radishes, the rocket, nada.
Okay.
Nothing.
All right. So let's have a think about this, right? This is good. No, this is good, because actually, like, this is exactly what happens to people. And this is kind of why sometimes people get, you know, frustrated with it, and they try it and then throw it there or whatever. So generally speaking, like, I'd be thinking about a couple of things that might have gone wrong here, right? First thing that jumps out at me is, how long was the bag of compost in the shed for? Was it new, or was it...
Well, it wasn't new, no.
Okay.
And it was opened.
Okay, so that could be a problem.
It was a bit dry, but I compensated for that by putting a lot of water on it.
Yeah, but
does it go off? There's a sell-by date.
It does go off, all right,
maybe that's it then.
And, like, generally speaking, we would say to people, like, potting compost has enough food in it to last about sort of, you know, 8 to 12 weeks, that kind of time frame. Definitely if you've
a bag. So once you open it,
and the air gets out, it's definitely degrading. So there could be a bit, that could be your problem, right? But it might not be the only thing. The other thing is you said about the planting depth, right? Which is how deep you sow the seeds.
Yeah.
It depends on the veg, right? So
no, I read you gave me the thing and I went by your instructions.
Did you follow the instructions?
I did.
Yeah, so like that's the other thing just for people to be careful with, I think. Like if you, I would say to people, maybe think about twice the depth needs to be about twice the size of the seed. So if you've got like a tiny carrot seed or a tiny carrot lettuce seed, for example, they're almost need to be on the surface.
Right, okay.
Whereas like a bigger thing like a pumpkin seed or a squash seed would be, you know, twice the depth of the seed might be down, you know, three or four centimetres.
Yes, yeah, which is about an inch and a half there.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous of you. You brought in, look, that's basil there. Is it lovely?
This is the basil here. So what I did was and I didn't want to rub your nose in it.
Yeah, well,
there.
You are. You're rubbing my nose in it. Look at you.
These are the 12 veg, right?
Yes,
and so they're all in a couple of small module trays. So everything is kind of... This is the stage, I suppose, it should be at after 3 or 4 weeks.
Right, well, nothing near that. So
nothing near that.
But
the one thing I would say, right, is, like, don't, you know...
I'm not going to give up.
Absolutely don't give up. And this is actually a really, really important point to say to people, that we tend to get kind of a bit hung up on, like, you sow in the spring and harvest in the autumn or whatever, whereas actually growing your own food is about more or less constant sowing, certainly from sort of February up until... You know, even September, October.
I haven't missed a window of opportunity.
Exactly, you haven't missed the window. And actually, this time of the year, it actually gets easier because it's nice and warm. There's no kind of cold temperatures at nighttime. There's way more light. Like we've got, at this stage, probably 16, 17 hours of daylight.
Yeah.
So things fly along. So for example, last weekend, I sowed some lettuce seeds in a module tray, just like this one I have in front of me, in the house, and they germinated within 24 hours. Like at the same time, if you did that back in February, it could take like a week for them to germinate or longer.
So
you know?
Maybe I might get a new bag of compost and start again.
Yeah, I think so. And I think actually Maya Dunphy was asking about this on Twitter today. There was a big debate about peat-free compost and stuff, and absolutely seek that out. You know,
peat-free
compost, because our most compost traditionally has been peat-based compost, and obviously that's in this day and age kind of frowned upon, rightly so. So seek out peat-free compost, and most garden centres, and even I think some of the big multiples like Lidl and Aldi have peat-free compost at the moment.
So the compost, and could the place I put them be too warm? No.
Yeah, potentially. There's one veg actually, lettuce. Lettuce is kind of particularly susceptible to high temperatures, make the seeds go dormant. Most though seeds like the heat. Generally speaking, the problem that you can have though is that just the compost dries out.
Okay.
And if it ever dries out to the point where it's like flaky and crumbly, sometimes seeds can actually go dormant and will not germinate at all after that. So it's really important to kind
I'm going to start afresh.
Yeah,
throw everything out.
Absolutely. And it'll catch up. Like this is the... These months are actually where things start to get much, much easier.
No, I'm determined, Mick. Yeah, I am determined.
I can see that by you.
No, this isn't a whim. This is a change in lifestyle. So I'm determined that this will work. Okay, we said you were coming in and we have a number of questions for you.
Yeah.
And we've Carol waiting to talk to you on the line. But first I'll go to Finola's question. She says, hi Ray, hi Mick. I grow veggies, for example, kale, cabbage, garlic, onions, strawberries, etc. And every single year, without fail, everything is attacked by butterflies and caterpillars and snails and slugs.
Yeah.
Is there any way I can stop this from happening? It's disheartening so much that it's putting me off bothering to grow anything at all.
Yeah, I can see that.
Now, can I just... I have to finish this off because this is important. Some real tips would be a great help.
Okay. So there's an inference there, I'm not quite sure what she means by that, but maybe the last tips weren't real. Yeah, like I think, again, totally agree, it's really disheartening when that happens. But different pests... Like, so once you get your sort of lovely seedlings, hopefully if you get them to this stage that we have in front of me here, you're planting out a seedling into the ground. It's leaving the kind of the cosy confines of your house or your potting shed or whatever, and it's out in the big bad world. And then, so slug, you know, pests become problematic. All of the brassica families, so things like kales, cabbages, cauliflowers, all that family, very susceptible to the cabbage white butterfly, which it lands on the leaves. Leaves its eggs there. The eggs turns into caterpillars. Caterpillars munch.
Yeah.
The only way to prevent that is a physical barrier over the plants. Uh-huh. So there's you'll get netting in garden centres. It's like a fine mesh netting called biomesh, and you just literally lay that over the plants, and that stops the caterpillar lying on it. So that sounds
like a real tip to me.
That's a real tip, definitely. Well, I hope so. Anyway, but you know.
Okay.
The other one, no, she mentioned slugs, which are obviously like the absolute, and particularly at this stage, nice tender seedlings. Slugs absolutely love them. So there's a couple of ways. Like I would say, don't buy slug pellets. Like they can be very toxic. There are organic slug pellets you can buy, which are just iron phosphate, which are harmless to the soil and kill the slugs as well. We've done lots of experimentation with beer traps because oddly enough, slugs, and I think rather endearingly, they love beer. So if you
does
put
it kill
a,
them?
Well, they drown in the beer.
Do
so
they,
yes,
right?
It does kill them.
So they're attracted by the smell, are they?
I don't know. I think it's the alcohol, because like we've tested like things like Bulmers, Guinness. They seem to love IPA, like craft beers.
Right.
So there's
right.
a bit of a hipster Fussy. Thing going on there. They don't like non-alcoholic beer.
Do they not?
So I think it must be the alcohol
right.
in
okay.
it.
What would you put it in?
Just a little shallow saucer, leave it on the soil, and the slugs kind of crawl in there and die. Now, if you don't want to go down that route, a really effective way to deal with them is actually to go slug hunting at night time, which is...
With a torch,
because they all come out immediately after dark. They come out and you'll literally find them, you know, crawling over the leaves, and you can pick them off, and then you can,
right.
like if you have
throw
hens,
them
give them to the hens, you
right.
can throw them into the neighbour's garden, whatever you want, you know.
right.
So that's a really effective way.
What are we
now.
Doing, Daddy? We're going
slug
hunting, son.
And it's really icky
okay,
on the hands
right,
and
okay.
all that, but it's a very effective way, particularly if you've, like a valuable seedling to me is, say, a courgette plant that'll produce maybe 30, 40 courgettes in a season.
It's worth putting
a bit of time in.
Carol is on the line. How are you doing, Carol?
Hi.
Where are you?
I'm in Mallow, County Cork.
Right. You've problem with vermin of a different kind?
Yeah, I have. Well, I wouldn't call them vermin.
No, sorry.
My problem is rabbits. I have way too many rabbits in my garden and I just can't seem to get on top of it. I'm losing the battle, I think.
Yeah, mix here.
Yeah, rabbits are a kind of a tricky one, Carol, for sure. I had them in my own garden. In the end, the only thing I could actually do, I tried everything as you sort of said you have as well. There are some sort of organic sprays you can buy that apparently I haven't sort of seen them work terribly effectively. Again, a physical barrier I think is the only way to keep rabbits out, and unfortunately that means a bit of work, you know, building in some like hen fencing, you know, the sort of mesh fencing into the ground so that they can't.
I have actually tried that and they go under it.
Yeah.
They just dig under the wire.
Yeah, they're very...
I think the only thing that I can do really is to try and plant some plants that are not, that they don't like to eat.
Yeah. How deep did you dig the fence?
Probably not deep enough.
Yeah.
But,
like what I had to do in the end actually was dig down about a foot or a foot and a half and put the chicken fencing into the ground.
Right.
And then sort of cover it back over, and they weren't able to dig. Like if they dug down they were coming up against the fence.
Yeah.
And that definitely worked. And I'd be inclined to try that, like if you really want to make it work, it sounds like you do. I think it's worth going to that trouble.
Okay.
And it's like, you know, a couple of hours work maybe depending on the size of the area you have, but like it'll fix the problem permanently.
And in terms of things that they don't like to eat, like my interest really is in flowers more than veg. And last year I planted catmint, which was very successful for last year, but this year they've taken the tops off it as soon as it started to flower.
Yeah, I think they're pretty persistent, and they like, you know, anything with green leaf in it. You know, they'll nibble on, they'll eat, they'll go in looking for the roots of carrots and beetroot and all sorts and stuff. So I think prevention is the best cure here. Yeah.
Okay. Well, good luck with your rabbits.
I hope it works for you, Carol.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let us know if it works for you. Thanks, Carol.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
That's Carol down in Mallow in County Cork. Have we got enough time for another one? Yeah. Bridget has been on. She says, I've successfully grown a gooseberry bush in a big pot this year. It is producing fruit, but how do I prune it after it's finished fruiting? Does it need a lot of water during fruiting?
Plenty of water during fruiting, and like pruning much later on in the autumn, in the dormant season, is what she needs to be thinking of. Like for now, you could, again, with fruit plants, you might want to be thinking about netting as well, because I notice at the moment, like birds are starting to get interested in strawberries because they're literally keeping an eye on them to see when they go ripe. They don't like eating them unripe. And same with all the fruit.
They're fussy, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, absolutely. They'll wait until it's absolutely just ready for your breakfast.
I remember reading about when they go off, then they sort of ferment and there's alcohol in them, and then they get sort of drunk. It's mad stuff. On that, there's a lot of reaction to your slugs there. Criminal waste of good beer, regards Cormac.
Yeah,
regards slugs, I find slugs don't like peas, so I plant my cabbage, etc., inside a rectangle of peas. Thank you, from a County Clare listener. And then Noel says, that leaving out beer for slugs didn't work for me anyway. They just drank it all one night, got drunk and started throwing stones at the windows.
Yeah, well, that can happen. I just think it's fascinating that slugs are picky when it comes to different brands and different varieties.
So we've 20 seconds just on the gooseberry, so you need to cover them again.
Yeah, I think absolutely. Get a cover over anything fruiting at the moment. If you've got lots of birds around your garden, they're going to go for it. Yeah,
okay,
for sure.
Mick, you'll be back in a few weeks, and hopefully I will have good news to report.
I'm leaving you a present of these seedlings as
No, I want to
do
it.
You want to do it yourself?
Yes,
from start.
I want to.
So do you want me to take these away as well?
Grow it yourself, Mick.
I know,
yes,
true.
Yes, you
but
come
I,
up
I'm,
the name.
I'm quite
not take
interested.
Mix and grow it yourself. Right, okay. Listen, we're out of time. Mick Kelly will be back. And grow it yourself is the website, isn't it? Mick?
Yeah, www.giy.ie. Loads of tips and free videos and advice.
And we'll see you in a few weeks. That's it from us. Sarah's on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.